You're listening to CJSF at 90.1 FM in Burnaby.
In this segment of our show, Peter Parsons will be giving us an update on his goal ball work. So what's the latest with your goal ball work?
Well, we just recently got back from Brazil for the America's Goal Ball Championships, and that was with the national team. However, three of us from Nova Scotia were there, so two of the players that I've started in the game and have been coaching, Mason Smith and Harry Nickerson. Mason Smith is 25 years old and Harry is 16 years old, and he was the youngest ever to make the Canadian men's national team. I've been coaching him since he was 10, and myself, I was oldest on the team by 14 years, so three of us from Nova Scotia. And we had a good tournament. We had qualified for the World Championships in China in June, which was our main goal. We didn't finish on the podium, unfortunately. We lost to Argentina in the semifinals, lost to USA in the bronze medal game. We beat USA in the round robin, which gave us first in our pool. However, we didn't quite capitalize because that gave us a favorable semifinal against Argentina as opposed to Brazil, who are the best in the world, but then we lost Argentina. But it was a great experience overall.
So, on an international stage, when you travel to play goal ball, do you find that the communities you go to are typically familiar with the sport or willing to learn about it?
Well, yeah, in particular in Brazil, because Brazil are the best in the world, and the tournament was held at the Paralympic Training Center in Sao Paulo, and so, it's a knowledgeable, passionate crowd that shows up for especially the games in which Brazil are playing, but yeah, it's, I think... because of the success of Brazil, they won the last two world championships. They won Paralympics in Tokyo. They were bronze medalists in Paris, actually. It's pretty big sport there in Brazil.
So, what steps are the players taking to get ready for the next round, next competition?
Yeah, so we're always, working on getting, stronger and better cardio. We're always working on our strength and conditioning, and also training on the goal ball court as much as possible. One of the things we our budget is a little limited, but we need to get together as a national team program a little more often. Actually, 2 weeks before we went to Brazil, our men's team, we got together in Halifax, where three of us are here in Nova Scotia. We had the two guys from Alberta and the one guy from Quebec. My teammates, Blair Nesbitt, Aaron Gabriel-Hannes from Alberta, and Raqibul Karim from Quebec. Yeah, and so we were able to kind of on a low budget, self-funded type of training camp that we did, which was helpful in preparing. So now as we're getting ready for World Championships in China, you know, we're going to have to continue to be creative and get together as much as we can leading up. Because, yeah, our budget is a little on the low side, and that could change with good results. Like, for example, making the quarterfinals at World Championships could really boost our budget going forward. But it's kind of like you need to get those results. So we're kind of investing in ourselves in a way to try to get those results.
So for the China Games, what would be the ideal outcome?
Well, I think being on the podium would be the ideal outcome. You know, we haven't been on the podium on the world stage in years as a national team program. And so that would be the ideal outcome. But like making quarterfinals, you know, being top eight in the world, that can increase our funding. And, you know, I know we're capable of it. Like, for example, when we beat the U.S. at the America's Go Ball Championships, it was the first time we beat them in 10 years. It was huge. It was a round robin game. However, the winner of that game was going to play Argentina in the semifinals, the loser to play Brazil, which Brazil are the best in the world, and they beat the U.S. handily in their semifinal. Unfortunately, as I mentioned earlier, we didn't quite capitalize, and we lost to Argentina, which them beating us was kind of an upset on a similar level to us beating the U.S. You know, so we can beat some of the top teams in the world, I believe, and it's just a matter of putting it all together and achieving our best results individually and then collectively. The one thing I feel have going for us is we have great team chemistry, and so I think that's great. And we also have some good young talent, including my Nova Scotian teammates, like Mason Smith. He's about to turn 26, going into his prime. Harry Nickerson, he'll be turning 17 in February, and I expect him to be one of the best in the world at a certain point, but he is still, his upside is really big right now, and from year to year, he's improving a lot, and he's a real student of the game, and he's a real great athlete coming from a gymnastics background at an early age. So, yeah, so lots to look forward to.
Like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
All right. Thank you.
My pleasure.
In this segment of our show, Richard Marsalis will be telling us a little bit about Achilles.
So what can you tell me about Achilles?
Well, Achilles is an international organization founded in 1983 in New York City by Dick Schramm, who was an accident. He became an amputee, and then he was the first person with a disability to do the New York Marathon. And he just felt like he wanted to spread the joy of accomplishment and break down barriers for persons with disabilities. So he started Achilles International in 1983, and now today it is in, they have 62 international chapters around the world in 17 countries, or 18 countries, and Ottawa, over just one of the many chapters, part of it. And it covers persons with amputees, blindness or visual impairment, and persons with in wheelchairs and that. So they have different types of races with push rim or wheelchairs, persons with different types of limb disabilities, and like I said, persons who are blind or visual impaired. Our group in Ottawa, strictly at this time, due to resources, have persons who are blind or visually impaired.
So, what are some of the benefits?
Well, through building community, and providing guides to persons who are blind, vision impaired. We're trying to promote full inspiration and the joy of achievement and accomplishments through different types of races. So, for example, I've been the president of Achilles Ottawa for about 5 years now. And some of our athletes, when they started, they, you know, were just walking short distances. And now they're doing 5K runs. And what a sense of self-esteem and self-worth. Achilles International did a survey of its members, and 80% of the athletes said that it increased their well-being and self-confidence to get out there and achieve. And through the sports, it's helped their day-to-day life. So in employment, in breaking down barriers for themselves, and accomplishments in school, so in relationships, it really makes a big difference to their overall well-being.
So how do you go about training an athlete with vision impairment or blindness?
Well, basically, like I said, we provide guides for these athletes, and we train the guides in artist communication, right? You have to be able to describe the environment, whether you need to step up, step down, if there's a crack on the ground, if there's trees, cars. So it's a matter of keeping the athlete safe and giving them a confident environment so that they know when they're out there, they can just enjoy themselves and work on their goals in a safe and healthy environment. And persons who are blind, vision impaired, or all athletes with disabilities, it's all about being equal and, you know, included and not being discriminated against. They just want to be like everybody else. We want to accomplish our goals, whether it's just at a grassroots level or if it's at a Paralympic level. You know, we have all athletes from all levels. In our group, like I said, we have some persons with development disability who've been had strokes, all kinds of different levels of abilities to be able to walk a 20-kilometer, or whether their goal is to run 5K or run and walk or accomplish a marathon. We have all the levels. We have a gentleman, Jason Dunkerley, who's a 5-time Paralympic athlete. So, you know, our goal is to support our athletes in whichever way we can, whether it's financially, emotionally, through our guides, through our connections with Achilles International. You know, it's all about accomplishment and giving people the sense of self-confidence and well-being.
So, in your time with Achilles, is there any success moment or story you'd like to share that stands out for you?
Yeah, again, this is one of our athletes that, you know, she came to us, she'd been through a motor vehicle accident, she had a stroke, you know, she was working with a team of workers to get her back integrated and back to a normal, healthy life, and it took a lot of convincing for us to speak to that team to say, you know, bring her out to Achilles, Ottawa, and we will be there. We'll support her every step of the way. We'll give her a safe environment to be in. Our guides will, you know, assist her every step of the way. And like I say, at the beginning, she was, you know, just walking very, very short distance. Now, each Sunday she comes out, she enjoys herself, she can walk 5K now, you know, she walks the full hour and beyond. And, you know, she just enjoys the group, and she's a full participant, and, you know, gets along with everybody, and feels a part of a community, and a great sense of accomplishment, and where she's come from, and where she is today. And that's why I've been the president for the last 5 years, is I see all the joy that we bring and the sense of accomplishment to these athletes. And I'm a Paralympic athlete as well, or not a Paralympic athlete, but I was on the national tandem cycling team for 7 years, so I know what it is and how hard it is for these athletes to reach their goals. Like I say, whether it's grassroots or Paralympic level, it takes a lot of energy. We put just as much heart, soul, sweat, into reaching those goals that we want, you know?
Like, thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great. Handy Link will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
The Windsor Amputee Support Group aims to provide a place where amputees can share their experiences. The WASG arranges guest speakers, social gatherings, and a peer support mentor program, which is available to both amputees and their families. Our office is now at Hotel de Grasse Healthcare on Prince Road. Appointments are required. To contact the Windsor Amputee Support Group, call 226-347-6678. Or email windsoramps@gmail.com. For more information, visit windsoramps.ca.
Welcome back to HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, Richard Marsalis told us a little bit about Achilles, and we heard about Peter Parsons' latest goalball work. This next segment of our show is a post-dated one, so some of the events referred to may already have happened. In this segment of our show, Jeff Thiessen will be giving us an update on Thrive. So what's the latest with Thrive?
Well, we just released issue number 30. And to do the math, I think that's probably into our eighth year of publication now. So that's good. We continue to get requests from prosthetic clinics across the country for more copies and requests from, what some call patients, the clinicians call patients. I like to call myself a client or a customer. So yeah, we continue to grow. And of course, there are always new amputees, unfortunately. But they are looking to Thrive for, inspiration. And, I cautiously use that word, but motivation, information, resources, connection with peers. That seems to be the job we're doing.
So that being said, do you find that it's got a benefit for, say, a new amputee who hears a real-life story of someone getting a prosthetic adjustment and they themselves are asking the question of, where can I go to seek support for this sort of thing? Does the lived experience provide help?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, from the componentry, the prosthetics, the equipment, that's a pretty straight line, generally. You're referred by a physiatrist or orthopedic surgeon to a clinic in your region if you choose, and that we have that option to choose if that prosthetist or orthotist is right for us. It seems that what folks are seeking is that more managing life skills outside of what you can glean in the prosthetic clinic. And that's where peer support comes in so importantly, and appropriate peer support too. I mean, there's such a diversity in anything, demographically within the amputee community, but age seems to be a big one, and nature or level of amputation too. So that appropriate peer support, someone of same age and stage in life, is certainly more effective, more relevant, and the Amputee Coalition of Canada is doing a nice job in connecting their peer visitor team with those that need that peer support.
So I'd imagine there's also benefits from real-life stories of debunking some of the myths or misperceptions surrounding becoming an amputee.
Yeah, what I still find fascinating with, the world being open to us through the internet and social media, that folks still feel very much alone when after an amputation. And there are over 200,000 of us in Canada that can be of some help. They're not alone, but that's that initial feeling, which is probably natural. It comes with loss, you know, grief, denial sometimes, those stages of grief. And connecting with someone, just if nothing else, to see that you're not alone, whether you're a parent of a child with a disability or a senior who has lost a limb to diabetes or vascular disease. There are others that can listen and provide some hacks and some encouragement that, you know, look, I'm doing it. Many others are doing it. We're making it. We're managing. We're thriving. And you can too.
So this being about the eighth year of the magazine, is there any success moment or highlight that's really stuck with you that you'd like to share?
Yeah, that's a tough question. You know, certainly that encouragement that I'm talking about is very satisfactory. We had a young girl lost her limb, and her parents were kind of her biggest handicapping condition. They were very protective, of course, and really weren't encouraging of her getting back into sports and horseback riding like she liked to do and playing tennis. And when she saw Thrive and saw other people doing it, it was a teachable moment for her parents to let her try. And she said through Thrive, she really got her life back. And it came to me in an old-fashioned letter in the mail, and I keep it in my drawer because that one means a lot to me, that we impacted a young person's life so dramatically.
What's interesting about that case in particular is some of the great advantages of amputees getting back into sport. I mean, there's no reason just because you have a prosthetic limb you can't live a full, rich, active lifestyle. You yourself, being a strong proponent of parasport, should have some insights there.
Yes, and there's the opportunity to live in two worlds, to benefit from two worlds. The mainstream sporting and recreation community is much more inclusive than it was when I lost my hands back in the late 70s. There is the equipment to facilitate that, be it, you know, special prosthetic hands for kayaking or playing baseball or playing tennis. I mean, that kind of equipment is there to support that too. But there's also the world of parasport, where it is other folks with similar type disabilities. So we can swim in both pools or both ponds, you might say. And I think that is, I'll say, a benefit of being someone with a disability, but it's an opportunity that maybe others don't have.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Always a pleasure. Thanks, Cam.
Thank you. And friends, what Richard was saying during his interview about the founding of Achilles kind of took me back a little bit. For those of you who have heard the show over a long period of time, you may remember I had the pleasure of interviewing Dick Trom a few years ago. He shared with me rather remarkable story about how he had met Terry Fox and played a role in helping to inspire his legendary run. That's the thing about disability life, my friends. You never know when you're creating that moment, when you're telling someone they can be and do better than what society expects. Never underestimate someone with a disability, for you never know how you're going to change their life. You tell them they can succeed, that may sink in. Conversely, if you tell them they cannot, it becomes set in stone where it doesn't need to be. As we all know, the disability population is diverse. People aren't always taking steps to better things for society as a whole. And sometimes a person will just act out of what they want to do, what they want to accomplish in life. There's nothing wrong with that. But acknowledging that this sets a precedent, that this opens a door, is equally important. You must always remember that someone with a disability lives to their fullest. They are, in fact, showing the world that they have a voice. They have something to say, something that matters. And if one person with a disability can show their potential, I maintain that we all can. We need not limit ourselves based on what society would impose. We need not be ruled by those perceptions of disability as a weakness. Most certainly is not. If people like Dick Trom taught us nothing else, it's that you can take that disability, turn it on its face, and make it your source of strength. Maybe it's a matter of doing things in a modified way. Maybe it's a matter of thinking outside the box. But if you own your disability, you're that much closer to owning yourself. It's one part of your identity. But we are not complete as people unless we acknowledge all of who and what we are. And if someone finds the strength within themselves to say, I want to be the first to compete in this marathon, and I'm going to give it my all. Whether I succeed or not, at least I made the attempt. At least I tried to blaze that trail. How can the close-minded among us maintain their prejudices or their biases with the evidence that something can be done staring them right in the face? How can someone say, this can't be done, when somebody actually did it? That's what disability life is all about. Creating a series of firsts. Creating steps forward, proving that what we once thought of as impossible can be done. And the more we do it, the more we innovate, the more we think outside the box, the more it gets done, and the easier it gets. Someone builds a wheelchair. That's great. And someone comes along and says, that's good, but how can I make it great? That's the next step. We must never rest on our laurels. In the disability community, we must never say we've made this as good as it can possibly be for these people. But the truth is, disability life and innovation are hand in hand. And we need not overcomplicate things. Sometimes it really is just the simple, practical solution that's best. Someone with a disability knows what works for them. As the saying goes, if you've met one person with a disability, you've met one person with a disability. You can't assume that anything symptomatic is across the board, that everyone's going to react this way, or that what works as a means of technology for one of them will work for all. The truth is, it depends upon availability, the support system, the person's own drives and motivations. I've always found that when a person is deeply motivated to do something, they might not always find a way, but they will always make a great attempt. They will always try their very best. If they're driven enough, if they're determined enough, and they're given the right supports, chances are they will create something new. They might not necessarily succeed in an instant, but you can always learn something from the attempt. Gaining knowledge is the first step towards disability survival. Understanding the nature of your own situation, how best to work with it, how to bring your skills forward, and yes, even how to be a part of the community. A person with a disability who shuts themselves away out of embarrassment, pain, or what have you, is not only doing a disservice to themselves, but to our community as a whole. We are part of this great tapestry we call life. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal. So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.
You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM in Burnaby. CJSF is diverse, independent, and yours. Underrepresented music, local voices, and real people. You keep CJSF independent.